everyone. Welcome to another week of Hour of Healing. We are here again with a thought-provoking topic. I am excited for today. We are ready to heal communities, families, heal ourselves. So I hope wherever you are, you are focused, you are connected. You know, just be here with us in this next few hour or, you know, just 30 minutes of your time, and we know that you'll be blessed. Again, I am Candace, your host for today, as usual. I'm here with Dr. Joe. Welcome, Dr. Joe.
Thank you, Sister Candace.
How is everything?
By God's grace, everything is going very well. We thank God for the grace He makes available to us each and every week.
That's good. That's good. And viewers, we hope all is well with you as well. Your week has been blessed, and we hope for the better. All right. So today, as usual, you know, I don't want to waste time. I don't like to waste time. Today's topic is disabled marriage. Ooh, disabled marriage. Who would have ever thought, right? We have a dysfunctional marriage, you know, but today we have a disabled marriage. As usual, Dr. Joe, if you want to give us insight into how this came about and what is for, you know, what it's about.
Yes, thank you, Sister Candace, once again for hosting us. And like you said, we hear about a lot of things about marriage and things of that nature. We hear of the living marriage, which we have actually had a podcast discussion on this previously on this platform. And so it's important for our audience to understand that whenever we talk about marriage, we're talking about a process, a journey. And what defines every marriage or a cardinal measure of any marriage at all is process. The process that leads to progress. You know, when any institution, so being a marriage, is looked at a minute level, there are certain defining features that has to be seen in that institution, in this case marriage. And whenever you are looking at these things, these measures, the route that any of these measures take and the process that the measures take is important to consider. And so in marriage, you have various phases. I talked about the living marriage already, and so I can define the living marriage for our audience again. And this is where a marriage is undergoing growth, which is the measure of the progress that that marriage has gone. But also there is that process of growing where every aspect of that marriage has an activity that is engineered to bring about growth. And so you are not seeing growth in one side and not in the other. Even though there is growth in one side, you see the process of growing in another or in all aspects of that marriage. And so every successful marriage that we know is in this phase of what we call living marriage. It's not a finished product. Marriage doesn't finish because it involves two people. Right. But it is in this phase where there is active working in all stages of that marriage to make it better. So living marriages, Sister Candace, are not static. And this is where, or this is the type of marriage that we all want. All marriage couples want their marriage to become a living marriage. They want it in this phase. And then obviously you have a dead marriage where there is that stagnation, that there is prior growth. I want our audience to understand that because it's very important. In a dead marriage, there is a prior growth, but there is stagnation. And so there is no new growth in any other place. And the marriage is regressing. It's very important. In a dead marriage, there is prior growth, the absence of new growth, and regression of the prior growth. When you see these three factors in your marriage, then your marriage is in the face of what we will call a dead marriage. And so there is, in short, no growth whatsoever. The couples may be going through the motions, and unfortunately, nobody has to tell you what the future of such a marriage is. Because the couples involved don't care about each other. You start seeing seeds of unfaithfulness. And you may not really see physical divorce, but emotionally and spiritually, they are divorced. They are completely separated. And so I will say that this is the type of marriage that all of us don't want, right?
is it the kind of marriage that you say, like, that? Is it when people say that we grew apart? Is it in relation to that, when people say we grew apart, like they grew separately or like became stagnant, but individually they grew? Can you explain that? Because we hear that all the time in relation to what you are saying.
Yeah, so growing apart is part of the process of the marriage becoming dead. It's a part of this whole process. It's not the face itself, but it's a cardinal point, or it's one of the indices of measure when we are talking about a dead marriage. Because people think that when you say a marriage is dead, that there is divorce. No, a dead marriage is actually not in divorce yet, because it's still a marriage, but it's dead. And so there is regression, and the regression can take the form of what you are asking, that it can take the form of falling apart, going separate ways. And the reason why, Sister Candace, all this happen is because emotionally, you are already separated. Emotionally, there is that divorce. And so there is something that I used to say a lot, that nobody marries their enemy.
Right.
And so at some point, every dead marriage that we see today was not dead. The process that the marriage underwent as it went from phase to phase is what has ended that marriage into this phase where we will describe it as a dead marriage. And then obviously, Sister Candace, we have the issue of a disabled marriage, which is what we are talking about today. And by the grace of God, I hope that we are able to help our audience see that a disabled marriage is actually very different from what a dead marriage is, but it is actually closer to a living marriage than a dead marriage. And I pray that by the grace of God, we will be able to help our audience understand what this is, be able to identify it in their own relationships, and hopefully give some healing nuggets as well today.
Wow, that's beautiful. And it's a very eye-opening thing to know, because sometimes, I think many a times we think, you know, when the marriage ends, when there is a divorce, when the contract has been signed, when, you know, the two parties goes their separate ways. And so I think when we are in the marriage or in that committed relationship, we don't take heed to the little things that you are referring to as a process, like processes that lead to the disability or leads to the death of the marriage. And so this is very interesting, but I want us to define what disabled marriage actually is. If it's not a dead marriage and it's clearly not going to be a living marriage, then where does it fall?
Yes, thank you very much, Sister Candace, for the input in there. And like you rightly said, disabled marriage is completely different. In actuality, let's think about life, right? When we say someone has a disability, what are we trying to talk about? We're talking about a condition in any person's life that makes it harder for that person to be able to perform certain activities or have equal access to certain things in life, right? And so whenever you hear the word disabled marriage, I want you to think about it in that sense, that you have a marriage that is functioning, but there are certain things in that marriage that is making it difficult or harder for the persons involved in that marriage to have the same enjoyment, to have the same satisfaction, to have the same level of activity that both parties are supposed to have. And so in real life, you will see this manifest in situations or in marriages where you see areas of tremendous growth in certain parts of the marriage, and then areas of significant neglect in other parts of the same marriage. And how many times have we all not come across couples, and then we say, oh, this couple is so great. Exactly. They are so great at this, but so a disabled marriage actually is referring to the but. Because like I defined for our audience in the beginning, a living marriage has an end. They have areas of significant growth and actively working on certain aspects. When you take a disabled marriage, there is areas of significant growth, but neglect on other sides. And so in a very concise way, that is how a disabled marriage is. And you know, as I was talking with you right now, I remember in the book of, I believe it's Revelation chapter 3, letters to the seven churches, when it came to the church of Ephesus, that he talks about, I know your deeds. I know how you hate the things that I hate. I know how you are zealous for the things that I care about. But yet I have this against you. That is the picture of the disabled marriage. That we have a lot of good things going our way, but there is also areas of neglect. And those are the areas that we hope to be able to point out and also get some healing in today.
Amazing. Wow. It's very understandable to actually have this, I believe, because if I'm prospering, like financially, you know, me and my partner, we are financially okay. Everything is stable. We are not even just okay. We are more than okay. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it can serve as a blanket, right? Mm-hmm. A covering onto the butt. So, believe it or not, I can say, I think it's safe to say that there are more disabled marriages that are happening around us that we are not aware of, right? So this is very interesting to actually see how a disabled marriage look like, right? Are there specific qualities? Are there, you know, actions, signs, symptoms, we would say, you know, in a medical field? are there things that we need to look out for? Because somebody may be listening, like I said, this could be a blanket, you know? And so to them, my marriage is fine. You know, all we wanted, both of us wanted is kids. We have them. What's next, you know? And so they're not seeing the signs that is leading them to be disabled, or they already are disabled, right? Correct. And so if we can point out certain qualities of a disabled marriage, I think it will really open up viewers' eyes to really see if they are in that situation, to know where to target, you know, their attention and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Well, since you used a medical term, symptoms, I will go ahead and say, so let's talk about some signs of a disabled marriage, right? Sister Candace, I can't agree with you more that in reality, if we are being honest with ourselves, my dear married couples, we will, without a doubt, know that most of our marriages are in this phase. And there is no shame about it. And that is why we grow. We grow by the grace of God and by acquiring knowledge, right? And so I want us to be able to point some of these things out, that my dear audience, by the time you see the yelling at each other, the screaming, the fight, the divorce papers being served, those are all symptoms of something that has been going on for years, even decades. And some of those things is what we hope to be able to point out to you, right? So one of the first things that I want to bring about is ineffective communication. That is one symptom, or that is one very telling thing about disabled marriage. You know, many people who have been at wedding occasions and things like that, especially in the traditional marriage sense, will know about communication. As everybody says, communication is the key in marriage. Communication is important. But what I always ask myself when I'm sitting in these places is, how
How do I communicate?
Yeah, you're saying they should communicate. These are people who talk. And so what do you mean by communication?
You know, I've actually heard, like, when you watch some of the reels about marriage, and, you know, you see, like, some people have married for, like, 70 years. Mm-hmm. Or, like, what is your secret, you know? And literally, no matter what they say, they will always bring it in. Communication. How? Like, you can talk to, but I think I'll leave it to you.
Yeah, but that's the truth, you know, that everybody talks about communication, but how? What right. does it entail? And so one of the main things is knowing what an actual effective communication in marriage is. Yes, we have verbal communications and nonverbal communications. Those are talked about agnosium at length by other platforms, and that is fine. But how do you identify ineffective communication? Again, communication in marriage is not just mere talk. Mm. Talking alone does not entail what many people are trying to get across when they say communication is what makes their marriage goes on. But if you should realize between you and your spouse that you only talk about important things, then you are not effectively communicating. If you and your spouse only share things that pertains to your children or others, you are not effectively communicating. Effective communication in marriage involves or entails having a sense of humor. Are you and your partner or your spouse, are you able to joke amongst yourself? This constitutes communication. Mm-hmm. So you see that when they talk about communication, they're not just talking about talking.
Right.
The other thing with ineffective communication is offense. When there is a lot of offense in a marriage, that is an ineffective communication. We live in an era where there is, a friend of mine said, an epidemic of offense, which is good and all when you're dealing with people outside. But when it comes to marriage, when there is a lot of offense, that every single thing becomes offensive to you, the way your spouse dresses, the way your spouse responds to a phone call, the way your spouse walks, if they start becoming something that bothers you, then there is ineffective communication.
Right.
Another thing is, there is nothing wrong, Sister Candace, with a couple having disagreements or being upset at each other. Mm-hmm. One of the important things about effective communication in marriage is that when there is that channel, the reasons for which the partner became upset is talked about and addressed. If you get upset at your partner, yes, take it from me, it's not wrong. But if you are not able to meet with your partner, sit down with your partner to talk about the things that brought about you being upset and address them, then you also dealing with ineffective communication. Mm-hmm. And in this, you are dealing with a symptom of a disabled marriage.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it got me actually thinking that it's more like a contract. When you're in a marriage where you only talk about important things or like things about the kids, it's like business. Like, you know, you have a business meeting, you go, that's not the time to talk about, you know, external things. Like I binge watch something on Netflix or whatever. Like literally you go with like an outline and you talk. And I think that's what some couples have used to define effective communication. They literally has adapted the skill of writing down bullet points to make sure they find time to speak to their spouse about them. And when once they are done, they have done an effective communication.
But here am I telling you that this is a sign of a disabled marriage. Mm. We're not saying that you have a bad marriage, but there is a disability that can function better. You know, Zakendis, another sign of a disabled marriage to move us along there will be that of competition. And this is something that we don't hear couples talk about. But believe you me, it exists. How do you identify competition in marriage when you and your partner or your spouse don't have common projects together? There is competition. When you feel or when you desire that every major thing in your marriage has to have your input or has to come from you, there is competition.
Wow.
When you lack the ability to rejoice at the success of your spouse, there is competition. You know, Sister Candace, there are couples who have a very good marriage, but yet their spouse is uncomfortable being around the success of the other spouse. And when this happens, I want you to understand, my dear audience, that it's a sign that you are dealing with a disabled marriage.
I mean, I feel like this is very serious because it's very, and I can't wait for us to get into the causes of these things.
But absolutely.
Very serious because I feel like, how are you going to live the rest of your life with someone who is literally competing with you? You know, this is not a friend you can run from, right? This is someone you're spending the rest of your life with. And I think this is what causes some marriages to be, well, perfectly said, disabled, right? Or dead. Because then it gets to a point that they can't handle the competition so much that they'll end up living together or still married, but then everybody's doing their own thing. You know, I'm going to be the top whatever, and another person is going to be the top whatever. There is no compromise. And I think this is very serious, a serious thing that we are talking about. I wish we can have a singles one, actually. Yeah, because speaking to other people, getting to marriage and all that, you need to be able to see or discern a person who is rather like competing or jealous over you. So you don't marry such a person. Absolutely. Or am I wrong? Should we go ahead and marry them?
No, we will talk about that some other day. But no, you're not wrong. And you know, Sister Candace, that's why I said this earlier, that a lot of people will scoff at the idea that they're competing with their spouse. But it manifests. Let me tell you one of the ways that it manifests. And I was blown away when this came to my mind. You know, one of the ways that competitiveness manifest in marriage is when you, as a partner, you care less about the progress your partner is making. So much so that it doesn't bother you when you don't even check in with them on that. That is one of the ways it manifests. So you can say whatever you want, my dear couples out there. But if you see that you lack the desire, the enthusiasm to check in with your spouse about the progress they are making in any aspect of their life outside the family, then you are dealing with a competitive spirit in marriage.
You know, I will bring us back to this, but I don't want us to lose track. But I want us to address this because in men, stuff like this, we can easily say is pride. You know, if we turn it to a gender issue, we can say that it's pride. But from what I'm hearing, it's like sometimes it's not pride. It's rather a competition that the partner, the man is probably feeling. They don't want their wife to be better than them, not because they are prideful, but... Correct. It's like, no, you know, it's that friction.
Yes.
So if we can share light on that, because somebody can think easily, I see this, but I think it's just pride. My husband is just egotistical, or he's just prideful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Right. That.
The question you're actually asking is actually also a sign of a disabled marriage, and that is the lack of support. That you ignore complimenting your spouse because you desire to be the essence, the one being supported rather than being the supportive one. And that actually is also a symptom of a disabled marriage. And it's difficult because most of the time, I get what people mean when they talk about just my husband is just proud or he just has a huge ego. Because there is that responsibility component that the man has the responsibility biblically to provide for the family. It doesn't matter how much your spouse is making, that is your mandate. And so with that, the way most people are able to address their responsibilities is to tie it with their emotions. And that is ego, right? And there is nothing wrong with having an ego that helps you meet your responsibilities. But when it gets you to the point where you are not supporting your spouse or your partner, then in that sense, in that picture, you are competing with them and causing the marriage to be disabled. You know,
I'm literally itching. I want to know the cause, but I have patience.
Let me give you maybe two more signs of a disabled marriage, and then we can find a way to wrap up here, and then we will talk about the causes and then how we heal from this next week, God willing. But the other thing, the other sign of a disabled marriage that I want to talk about is the lack of romantic spark. You know, when you take from a moral standpoint, romance is reserved for marriage. But we live in an era where we have so cheapened, if I can use that word, we have so cheapened romance that romance has become more enjoyable, more sought for in an extramarital or premarital setting than in a marital setting. What I mean is this, that when two people are going out before they get married, you see the romantic spark. They desire to be romantic with each other. But as soon as they get married, that spark seems to go away. Sister Candace, if we're being honest, statistics will tell us that a lot of marriages that are dead, they are not disabled, but are dead right now in our day and age today, is because of extramarital activities, most of them being affairs. Why? Why is that? Because the spark that they saw or they anticipated being able to have, take the Christian brother or sister who has done their due diligence to be able to remain chaste until they get married. And then they get married, and now they are married to someone who does not have any desire to be romantic with them. That becomes a burden. And yes, in the marriage, it is a disability, but it can lead to other unwanted consequences. And when we talk about romantic spark, there's a lot of things that the phrase romantic spark encompasses. Being able to hold hands, giving hugs, being affectionate is just one part of a romantic spark. The way you let your spouse feel they are appreciated is also a romantic spark.
You are loved.
The way you talk about your spouse to your coworkers, your colleagues, your business partners is also a romantic spark. The way you celebrate your spouse is a romantic spark. And so you see that this is not just a one-size-fit-all. It's something that encompasses a wide range of things that need to be paid heed to, you know? And then probably the last sign that I will bring up, and this is a big one, Sister Candace. Okay.
So then before you bring that up, though, with the romantic spark, I feel like with what you said, you were right. I believe it's statistics and society. You know, there are some things in marriage that are meant to be in marriage and for marriage that I feel like outside marriage type of relationships has rather honed in to practice it more. So I think it's not the marriage couples. I'm defending you, okay? it's not so much them. I think it's just like society, right? It takes somebody to really take that shift or that new perspective and say, wait a minute, this is supposed to be in here, you know? Because it's the same people that were dating and they were able to do those things, right? So why stop now? That means they have it in them. It's just they probably have a wrong idea about what marriage is and what is allowed and what is not allowed, right?
Well, I don't know if I fully agree with them not having the right idea of what marriage is, because a lot of these things that we are talking about that we do when we are boyfriend and girlfriend or dating and all those things, we do them with the understanding that we're going to get married. But the issue is, yes, society has played a major role in it because we have cheapened the things that are supposed to make marriage enjoyable, so much so. But who brought it out of marriage in the first place? It was married people. Before married people brought these things that were uniquely designed for marriage outside of marriage, Sister Candace, it only remained in marriage. So I don't know if that makes sense.
It makes sense, but you know.
So I get what you're saying, that yes, we get into marriage and we seem to forget. But I don't think it's an issue of forgetting. That's what I'm trying to drive at. I think it's an issue of not thinking it to be valuable enough to still do them.
Now you already got the person.
We think that it's not valuable enough for me to send a flower to my husband's job.
People will say it's a waste of time.
Yes. Sometimes married couple, you talk with them and there is an issue you're trying to address, and they will talk about the fact that, oh, my wife doesn't like that. So my wife doesn't like flowers. Well, buy the flowers anyway. And I will use myself as an example here. I know I don't usually like to talk about myself or my marriage or anything on this platform, but my wife happens to be someone who doesn't like flowers or plants that much when we got married. But I decided that I was going to buy her flowers every week. And 1 week led to another. In the beginning, the flowers will lay there and they will die off. But guess what happened in the course of time? She bought a flower pot. And then after some time, I will bring the flowers home and she will put them in the flower pot and nurture them. So the question is, did she actually not like flowers? Or she just never saw the need to have one?
And I think an angle of that can also be that somebody may not like something, but they can accept that it's your form of showing affection. Exactly. Right? And that is why I think sometimes the couples get it wrong. Like, if they don't like it, then there's no use of it.
Correct.
But they're now knowing that they love you. So whatever is about you, like whatever, exactly. They love everything about you, right?
Exactly. And so that's a healing point right there. And I want to be able to talk a little bit about one more sign, because I think this is important. We can leave the others for some time later. But one big, big sign of a disabled marriage is no set goals. When your marriage doesn't have some set goals for that marriage, that is a big sign that you are dealing with a disabled marriage. When we talk about set goals, let me help you out, my dear audience, to understand some of these things. Vacations is one of them. You don't have to be doing them, maybe because of financial reasons or whatever the reasons might be, but there has to be that goal that we want to do this as a couple. That has to be in place. If you don't have that, and not just having it and writing it down, putting it in a safe and putting it in the bank. No, it's something that has to be revisited from time to time.
Right.
Other set goals include dreams that you share. This is my dream for our next year or our next 5 years. If you are a Christian, you can even use that and the mandate that you think God has given you for the next year for your marriage. Because I truly believe that every Christian marriage has a purpose each and every year God leads that marriage into. And so 1 year, God will lead the marriage into a time of fruitfulness. The next year will be a time of establishment. The next year will be a time of increase. The next year will be a time of effective communication. These are all things that I believe God takes us through as Christian couples to help reflect Himself in our marriages. And so if you're a Christian couple, have this in there. This can be your dream. If you are non-Christian or non-believers, you also have a mandate to have dreams and goals for your marriage. So this year, this is the dream and the hopes that we have for our children. Another form of set goals will be projects that the marriage is involved in. Some have a project of doing missions or amount of money that they want to donate or some charitable event that they want to do. Sister Candace, I kid you not that if you should sit down with 10 couples who are dealing with issues in the marriage and you should dissect it to the T, you will find that 9 out of the 10 do not have any set goals.
And I think sometimes that's probably because people define goals differently. I don't know if you want to elaborate on that, because for them, a goal could be like, let's build a house. That's a goal. But something as little as characteristics, like you work on your anger this year, I don't think people feel like that could be a goal, you know?
Well, it is a goal, because a goal, basically, Sister Candace, is something that you don't have that you desire to obtain. Anything that is outside of you that you want to have is a goal. So right. The building of the house, you don't have the house now. You want to build it. If you have built a house, but you want to buy a new car, that is something you don't have. In the same way, if anger is an issue in the marriage, lack of support is an issue in the marriage, that is something outside the marriage. And for you to bring it in, it is a goal. Right. And so I don't know if that explains what I mean totally for our audience, but this is a big and a massive one that every time you are dealing with a disabled marriage, I will say a chunk of the pie goes to ineffective communication and the lack of set goals. The lack of set goals. These two things impact so much than I would say even all the other things that we have talked about.
Wow. And I can see how the set goal can be a symptom of the disability or disabled marriage. Because if you don't have any goals, then you're not growing. You know?
Correct.
You will not grow. You will not evolve as a couple. You will not evolve as individuals. So I think that is huge. That probably cuts through the other ones that we've talked about.
Absolutely.
Lack of communication, lack of romantic spark, lack of support, competition. Set goals.
Yes.
To attain them or to fix them. Yes. So I think I can see it. That's very powerful. I'm not married, but guys, I've already healed my marriage. So we delve into signs of a disabled marriage, right? Mm-hmm. And we talked about 5 points of how to identify and recognize if I'm not saying your marriage is, but if you are in that category of a disabled marriage. Absolutely. And if you are, there is no shame. We are healing ourselves. You Correct. Know, it's hour of healing families, because if you are healed, you know how to better help your children and the generations
Absolutely.
To come.
Absolutely.
Okay. So Don't forget next week the causes of these. You know, you've heard them, but you need to know where it's coming from so that you can uproot it. Okay? So it's easier said than done when you just know the problem. But you can, it's fixable when you know the cause.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I will hand it over to Dr. Joe as he gives us a brief summary of what a disabled marriage is in its totality.
Yes, thank you very much, Sister Candace. And audience, we will be picking up on this next week. As Sister Candace said, we have been talking about the disabled marriage today, and we have tried to hone in for you and to dissect this for you to understand that when we talk about a disabled marriage, we are not talking about marriage not being enjoyable, marriage not having growth. No, the fact that your marriage is disabled actually means that you are experiencing growth in a lot of areas, but there is also neglect that needs to be addressed. And these are some of the things that will show you that there are areas that has been neglected. Join us same time next week as we dive into what brings about this neglect. And then by God's grace, we will be able to also share with you how you will get your healing. We thank you so much for joining us today. God bless you. And we will see you same time next week. Bye-bye.